Welcome to the third US-China Art Dialogue, a special initiative we began about this time last year and now in its Three is Lucky edition back here in Hong Kong during this extraordinary Art Week. We've explored through this series a number of issues with people like Kingsley Ng, who's going to be representing Hong Kong at the Venice Biennale upcoming, Ruby Yang, who won the Oscar and now leads the School of Future Media at the University of Hong Kong. In an earlier episode, of course, we had Daphne King, who is the chair of the Asian Cultural Council and the global director of Alice in Fine Arts. And not forgetting, of course, Philip Tenari, who's just moved to Hong Kong from Beijing as the deputy head and now head of art at Dai Kun Arts. So all of these conversations lead us now onto this apex moment, which is Hong Kong. That's where we are. Hong Kong as a hub for cultural futures. And what we're going to do is examine what it means to be an art hub in an era of shifting global dynamics. We're going to ask that question of how institutions challenge and balance local engagement with international dialogue, and what role Hong Kong's cultural leaders can play, or do they play, in shaping contemporary art and the future of that. To guide us through that, we've got two true leaders who are shaping Hong Kong's cultural landscape each and every day through what they do at work. Please welcome Alice Mong, President of Asia Society Hong Kong Centre, and Alan Lowe, Chair of Parasite. Thank you both for being with us. I want to start with either of you by looking at what local means today in a world that's globalized, but in a world where globalization is pretty much done, some will say. In a city as transient and international as Hong Kong, is it about birthplace, residency, mindset, or something else entirely, Alice?
Well, I would say it's about whatever the artist wants. When you talk about local and global, and that is something that Asia Society Hong Kong, we're Asia Society, part of the global network, but we're Hong Kong, and which is a local. But when you come to talk about artists, for example, the other day at Art Basel, the opening, I saw she was born in France, but she's lived in Hong Kong. She's become an artist in Hong Kong. So how do you categorize her? She's a French artist, she's a woman artist, and she's also a Hong Kong artist. So is she a local artist or is she a global artist? So those are the questions that I don't think is that important to me anyway. For example, I think of Picasso. I think of Van Gogh. How do you define them? I mean, Picasso is from Spain, but he's an artist, and Van Gogh as well, born in Holland. But again, we know him. He spent a lot of time in France and also elsewhere. So I don't think about label as the global and local. As an institution, we are both. We have global artists as well as local artists. And it's really up to the artists how they see themselves is how I define it.
I mean, Alan, you're born and raised Hong Kong, but you've spent, important parts of your life in America, mm-hmm. over in Connecticut, where you were in high school, and then, of course, in New Jersey after that, a place which you go back often to now as a council member of the Princeton University Art Museum, of course, LA, where you are an advisor to MoMA over there. Tell me what local global means to you.
It's to me, local. I guess people who are familiar with me, I don't often use the term local so much. I mean, I guess if someone is based in Hong Kong, they're Hong Kong based. But I agree with Alice. I think this we do live in a very kind of it is an uber local, uber global kind of situation where there's so much movement and it's just hard to pinpoint. And I think this is also where we begin to see incredibly interesting transnational practices that are sort of all over the world.
Well, Hong Kong is at this hub of China and the world. It tells these China world stories or these world China stories. Mm. I mean, how is Hong Kong uniquely positioned to prototype those new models of artistic production, curation, and public engagement? I want you to look at that, Alice, not only as a person who's Chinese, but someone who is first and foremost American yourself. You were born and raised, I think, in Ohio with not many. No, I'm wrong. Where was it again?
I was born in Taiwan.
Oh.
But I immigrated to the States when I was 10. We lived in Virginia, Maryland, and I ended up in Ohio, where I went to high school and university. And so I am a Chinese American, first generation. But I arrived in Hong Kong my 30s. I now live in Hong Kong longer than anywhere else. Mm. But I don't call myself a Hong Konger, because you guys are very particular about Xianggangren. But I consider Hong Kong home. So I don't care about the labels. I can't call myself a Taiwanese, even though I'm born in Taiwan, because my father was Waishengren. So I call myself a Chinese American and from Ohio. When people ask me where I'm from, I say I'm from Ohio because that's where I went to school, and that was where I identified myself as an Ohioan, but I'm also a Chinese American.
So maybe not quite the Hong Konger, as you said, but certainly someone who's contributed to that space so fundamentally and brought it from your previous roles as head of C100 and I think the Museum of Chinese in America as well. What's Hong Kong's asset? Actually, I should ask you, is Hong Kong special to all this at all?
It is special. That's why we're all here. And I consider Hong Kong home now. I live now in Hong Kong longer than anywhere else. I think half my life now. Well, not even half. So Hong Kong, it is a unique place. It is in that it is, you know, I think my first trip to Hong Kong was 1988, my first trip to China. And I remember kind of falling in love with Hong Kong and say, one day I would like to come and work here. And I ended up working here in 1992 when my company, the state of Ohio, transferred me here. So I ran the Ohio office here in Hong Kong. So Hong Kong is special in that it is both East and West. I know that's, you know, we talked about that, you know, it's the East and West, but it does the history, you know, and right now, as you know, Asia Society, Hong Kong is in a colonial site. That was founded in 1860s. So Hong Kong has that Western history, but it is also a Chinese city. I remember really first trip in 88, falling in love with that energy of both East and West. But it is very much a Chinese city, I felt the first time, because I remember Cantonese, you know, this is the 80s, and I speak Mandarin, and it was not as welcome back then. But when I moved here in the 90s, 92, as we get closer to 97, my Mandarin became more and more useful. And now I have to say my Cantonese was never that good, and it still isn't, but I can get by. Yeah. But I feel like Hong Kong is the city that accept you can be this Chinese American. And right now here in Hong Kong, I remember meeting a lot of Chinese Canadian, the diaspora community. So I, maybe because my work at the Museum of Chinese in America and also Committee of 100, I'm fascinated with the diaspora history of that Hong Kong. In fact, I was thinking about this because last week, working with the Irish Consul General, they were showing a documentary about the Irish diaspora. And, you know, the way they describe Ireland is a country of 7 million, mm-hmm. but with 60 million Irish around the world. And I looked up the Hong Kong, overseas Chinese numbers. In fact, when they were talking about that number, I thought, oh, that sounds like Hong Kong. Hong Kong is an island. We're, 7 or 8 million? And most of the diaspora, overseas Chinese, left out of this area. Mm. And we have about 40 to 50 million. I don't know what the exact number is, but 40 and 50 million overseas Chinese. And so Hong Kong has that kind of, it is Chinese city. And but it has, you know, definitely has the best Chinese food in the world. I know friends in Beijing and Shanghai will disagree with me, but I do feel Hong Kong has that mix. It is part of Hong Kong's DNA that. And that's why I feel Hong Kong is special. Mm. And especially nowadays with this, all the conflicts and all the, you know, problems around the world, to have that, you know, even as a Chinese American now, it's not comfortable being Chinese American these days in the U.S., in certain parts of the United States. But here in Hong Kong, continues to be. And this is one of the reasons I chose to come back to work here in 2011, when I came back the second time. So the first time, 11 years, second time, 14 years. So I've spent 25 years here in Hong Kong total.
Well, one of the people who's been instrumental in your professional life, both in the United States and especially here in Hong Kong, is, of course, Ronnie Chan, who sits on the board of QCEF, a person who's been instrumental in unleashing the possibilities for young people in both Hong Kong and the United States, of course, across mainland China as well. And I was wondering if there was a seminal figure in your life. I mean, yesterday we were having dinner for Princeton University Art Museum. And you mentioned your father, Dr. Victor Lo, who was the inaugural chair of M Plus Museum. Now this incredible space, but for so long, and a kernel of an idea that I think was created. I mean, he said in his opening speech by Mr. Tung Chi Hua, our founder, who said in his very first policy address in 1998 that there must be a cultural space for Hong Kong. It was, I think, one or two lines in that policy address. But look at what it's become. Look at what it's become today, transforming what I think one of our previous speakers described as a city that was really akin to a cultural desert to one where thousands of people come just for this one week alone, let alone throughout the year. What did Dr. Lo teach you about what it meant to be a responsible diplomat in what you do today for Hong Kong? And that bridges all three ideas from the three conversations we're having for this.
I guess amongst many things he's been involved with, he was the founding chair of the Hong Kong Science Park. He was chairman of the board of the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. He was founding chair of the Hong Kong Design Center. So I think to him, I think it was very much focusing on what Hong Kong really needed. Taking that very long term view on sort of Hong Kong and Hong Kong's place in the context of the world, which, you know, obviously it's still something that applies to, you know, thinking about fast forward, you know, 20, 30 years, looking at where we are today and seeing, you know, in the sort of in the, what does Hong Kong want to be, you know, sort of like in the global context, within the Greater Bay Area, within Asia. Obviously, we are leading in a number of areas, but at the same time, the landscape has also changed. Even the cultural landscape in Asia has changed so much. You know, the museums and institutions, foundations are popping up all over. You know, in Thailand, in the Philippines, in Korea. In Singapore, I suppose the question here is where and how do we sort of see ourselves in let's say in the next 10 years?
I need to touch before we wrap up on what you do today. I mean, Asia Society and of course a number of institutions that you help represent, Alan. But you both lead organizations with distinct origins. One, a grassroots artist initiative. The other, a truly global network, Asia Society. As Hong Kong's cultural landscape matures, and as Alan just said there, it continues to evolve. It's never really static, is it? It keeps moving. It ticks along. It flies along. If Hong Kong, the pace here is a lot faster than in most parts of the world. But as Hong Kong's cultural landscape continues to mature, what can independent spaces and established institutions learn from one another? Where do you see productive collaboration emerging, Alice?
Well, I see there's so many areas that I see the collaboration. I think my organization is, even though we're part of the global network, we're still quite kind of small comparative, like M Plus or Palace Museum. And we're kind of a private, you know, we're not getting the kind of government support. But I find the role of institution, the small, it's quite nimble. You can move, you can collaborate, you can curate, you know, differently. You know, we do not need lead time. And for example, I'm seeing somebody here, we were able to curate a fantastic ink art show in a matter of months, which I know other institutions probably could not do, with the artist Bing Yi, who we had a month and a half, almost 2 month show, whereas other institution probably would take years. So I think that nimbleness is where a smaller organization, maybe the larger organization can learn from. And what some of the organization can learn from the larger organization, resources, fundraising, how to collaborate, on doing project. You know, one has a vision and the other one maybe can help get the resources. So I think you can learn from each other and also collaborate. Some projects, you need the space, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's more of the curation, you know. So I think really the sky's the limit in right now here in Asia. We don't have to follow the model of the traditional institutions, mm-hmm. where I think it is really human resource centric, and also now technology also can help, lower the cost. And Hong Kong, another thing that I love about Hong Kong is how efficient and fast paced. We're gonna do something, get it done. We can get a really good show up in a year, whereas I think, again, some of the older cities and institutions, it's so embedded, the infrastructure, that it sometimes does take 2 or 3 years to get a show together, whereas I think this is where the uniqueness of here.
Alan is mmming in agreement throughout, but you make me a little bit nervous because you're the dice in all this, because you keep going back to Singapore, especially after COVID. You set up your Yen and Alan Lowe Foundation over there. You've been supporting extraordinary initiatives like C and, of course, Kim Foundation, I think, also as well. But let's make sure you're rooted here in Hong Kong. Don't forget where you came from, Alan. Don't go anywhere, okay? Where do you see those institutions learning from each other? And I want you to take that idea, not only in Hong Kong and your experience in Singapore, but through your multiple myriad of experiences in the United States.
I guess I've had the privilege of having been involved with a number of institutions. I was on the Tate Asia Pacific Acquisitions Committee. I was, as you mentioned, I'm on the MOCA LA Global Council, as well as the Guggenheim Asia Acquisitions Group. So it's always good to see how, I think when we think about diplomacy, I think that part of it is also, it's a little bit like soft power. I think it's sort of like really trying to, I always think that rather than sort of like looking at home and trying to like keep telling ourselves or keep trying to sort of like self-promote to the community, we should be going out there and really kind of, I don't want to say exert influence, but I guess really kind of try to kind of introduce and support as a patron or, as someone who's involved in these organizations to really try to kind of get, in terms of like the best in terms of talents, in terms of artists, in terms of, curators supporting and kind of getting it into the global institutional system. I think that is, to me, from an ROI perspective as a business person, is better than anything else.
That is important, but you also touched on a few important words. You said probably not to use the word to influence, because we live in a time and in a global moment where sponsoring, supporting, co-hosting, that creates a lot of ideas where people self-project and think, are you trying to influence me? What is your actual aim? So I want to push you on that by asking you, Alan, how do you do the good work of that, but in a space where mistrust, suspicion actually lives? How do you do it in a way where people don't stop you from doing the right thing in life, but actually where you're able to share what you're able to offer instead?
I mean, this is where conversations and dialogues come into play. I mean, this past project we did in Singapore, that's Kim Association, was a project with Shuang Li, who's a Chinese artist based in Berlin, and it's a project that is a co-commission with Kunsthalle Basel. So we're talking about not just us sort of bringing a project to the institution or to our spaces, but also kind of working closely with and having conversation. I mean, this week during Art Basel, we're literally, I ended up spending more time bumping into heads of institutions and say, what have you, we've been doing this, we've been doing that. Let's talk about co-commission. So I think a lot of, it's sort of this new model that is becoming a thing.
Let's finish with this. Alice, you go first on this. Hong Kong is an emotional touchstone for you, as well as being a place of work and living. What is your hope for our cultural future, and what is Hong Kong's role in that next decade to 2035?
Well, I think, you know, Hong Kong is already doing that. I think, you know, right now with these institutions like M+, and I want to kind of set an example with the Shazia Sikander Commission. Dorian told us, and it was 10 years ago, we did the Shazia Sikander show, Apparatus of Power. And when we did that show, she approached us because of our colonial history. She was our Game Changer Award. I believe it was like about 2013 or something. And she came to us because of the colonial history of our building. She said, you know, I have this project and would we be interested? We did it. And in fact, she was our first women artist show. And from there, she inspired us to think about how come there was no Chinese contemporary women artists. So we started a series. In fact, I see Fang Zhaoling hanging there. So we started a series, and a lot of it was inspired by Shazia. But 10 years later, the commission at the with M+, that project continues her exploration of the East India, I mean, the colonialism, you know, the decolonization and so on and so forth. So I think Hong Kong has that unique blend, I think, artists. So what I would love to see is projects continuing to inspire artists from all over, not just diaspora, Chinese diaspora, but just artists. And Hong Kong is this that unique space. Now you have institutions, not just here in M+, the galleries, the art fair. Today we had a discussion with DIP Thailand. My former colleague Mowako is now running this fantastic space in Bangkok that just opened in December. So what? And then yesterday we had a discussion with National Gallery and Singapore a curator who we will be doing a show on a Singaporean artist. It will be first time ever. So for me right now is we're part, I think what I would like to see is when they think of art, they used to say London, New York, and Paris maybe. And now Hong Kong is in that equation, as well as Beijing, Shanghai, Singapore. Because before there weren't these Asian cities. And now, why shouldn't we, you know, Singapore, Hong Kong? So it's not, and you were talking about, it's not either or, and I think it's an and. I see wonderful things happening in Shanghai as well, and Beijing, Hangzhou, right now, GBA. This has been a talk this week. We've been focusing on the institutions that are coming up. GBA, the Greater Bay Area, you were seeing some beautiful spaces. So for me right now, Hong Kong has that interesting role to play, because also training. You just because you have these institutions, you need people to run it. You need curator. You need artists. And Hong Kong has that unique, you know, we have artists. Going back to the artists I said before, a French artist living here. We have that diaspora, again, not just the Chinese diaspora, but diaspora community. So I think Hong Kong is part of that, that I do see it now, and it will be the next decade or two.
Alan, great hope. What is it for Hong Kong?
Hong Kong is still by far the most important hub in Asia, no doubt. But as I said earlier, we're also starting to see a lot of development in the region. So I think it's just important for us to kind of think about kind of our positioning and to really kind of take a long term view on how we see Hong Kong. I think that the diaspora is actually an area that has so much potential. I mean, we've done, my colleagues, both the foundation and the space has done, you know, actually quite a bit of research on, you know, we have this sort of running list of 100+, you know, transnational artists of Asia origin who are doing amazing things, amazing practice, doing really good projects with institutions, and who could do even more, and to bring them back to Asia, bring them to Hong Kong. It's going to be a very exciting next sort of 5 to 10 years, I think.
Well, Alan Lowe and Alice Mong, I usually end by saying thank you for being part of this conversation, but let me go a step further by thanking you both for helping bring this city to that place we envision in 2035. As we bring this special day to a close, I want to return to where we began, which is the belief in the power of art to connect us to the shared humanity that we're all card-carrying members of. We set out to explore the responsibility of art, its diplomatic strength, and then, as we heard just there, Hong Kong's role in our cultural future. Thanks to all of our brilliant speakers, to Ruby Yang, Kingsley Ng, Daphne King Yao, Philip Tenari, Alan Lowe, and Alice Mong for your thoughtful contributions. And thank you to our live audience for being such an engaged part of this experience, which leads me to say very, very big thanks to our wonderful co-host Daphne King Yao and the entire team at Allison Fine Arts for opening up this beautiful but also important space to us. This is the first time that we've hosted an event in the form of a live studio recording, and that was intentional. Everything we heard today will be available across social media, be it from WeChat to YouTube to X to Facebook, and that's where you can see and hear it. We'll be taking the ideas that we had today from the six of you, and we'll be bringing them out with a special bonus edition with Noah Horowitz, the CEO of Art Basel. So when you leave this room, the conversation doesn't end. It's not something we do as a routine exercise this time every year. It travels. It becomes something that people across the world can listen to, learn from, and build upon. And that, I think, is the real power of what we built here today. Thank you all for being part of the third US-China Art Dialogue. We hope to see you again wherever we are next time.